Evening all, this is the Northeast Sipping Forecast. My name's Miles and I'm here with my good friend Rob. Hello Rob.
Hi Miles.
Now, the idea of the Northeast Sipping Forecast is to explore the Northeast beer scene and have a little bit of fun along the way. For those that don't know me, I've been a beer blogger for a few years. I am passionate about beer and passionate about the Northeast, and I'm keen to introduce Rob to some of the Northeast beer scene. Rob, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Where beer is concerned, as you know, Miles, I'm a bit of a novice. Over the last couple of years, I've started to get a bit of a taste, though, for strong IPAs, guided in part by you, in part by a little trip to America, where I met somebody who sort of gave me the background of IPA, and it resonated with me. So I've started getting into it, enjoying it, but as I say, I've got a lot to learn, and hopefully with this podcast, we will.
You'll soon learn that Rob will ask the questions that a lot of people are afraid to ask. With the podcast, we have a lot planned, but for this first show, we just want to keep it simple, just the two of us having a good chat about good beer. So, have a listen. Tonight, we are sampling Tynebank Brewery Mocha Milk Stout. This is a milk stout, sitting on the bottle, brewed with fresh Pumphrey's coffee, lactose, chocolate and vanilla pods. This beer, the reason I chose this beer is when I first started drinking, exploring more of the craft offerings, this was the first stout I ever had beyond Guinness, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And like at that stage, it was like, wow, stout is actually really, really tasty beer. So I thought I'd introduce it to you.
I don't know the brewery.
You don't know?
Well, I've seen it,
yeah,
but I've never tried any of their stuff.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'll be honest, this is my favourite of the stuff that they do. Great Taste Award in 2015.
Did it? What's the strength?
6%.
Okay. I noticed these Great Taste things. This one, one that I like, that APA one. You know, the Allendale.
Allendale. Yeah.
But I didn't know whether that was just something that.
They're given out to all different areas. It's not just beer, it's food stuff as well. So
that's good. I know Pumphrey's Coffee.
Local,
isn't it? It's like a...
Yeah, they're based in the Granger Mountain in town.
I was looking for recently roasted coffee beans.
Mm-hmm.
So when I googled it, came up as Pumphrey's is a place to go for really fresh.
There's an awful lot of coffee beers coming along.
Mm-hmm.
This year in particular, more than ever, you get a lot of coffee beers. And this is quite an old beer, you know, that this beer's been around for quite a few years now.
How long's the brewery been about?
6 years, I would guess. Yeah. We went in the fourth birthday, didn't we? At the brewery a couple of years ago.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Very nice.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Like an espresso chug.
What's the first flavour you get then?
Coffee.
Mm-hmm. And following that up?
Chocolate.
Mm-hmm. So, breaking that down, what is it that gives it the coffee flavour? Is that a bitterness? And is the chocolate a contrast and sweet flavour? I get that.
Yeah, it's the... a lot of these... There was the... a craft beer calling. There was the espresso. It was amazing coffee stout, and it was it wasn't a northern.
The Beavertown.
Beavertown
espresso. Yeah,
and it was like 12% or something like
that.
Yeah,
the barrel aged espresso was delicious.
To me, I mean, I do get the chocolate right at the end of this, but mainly I just get a deep coffee flavour that is very, you know, it's just like cold alcoholic espresso,
which is exactly cold alcoholic. But it's what I like. I think what I liked about this when I first had it was that really thick texture, very smooth, and there's like a velvet feel to it, isn't it? I think a thick viscous stout has a certain luxury feel to it. You know,
I think the smooth flavour is the chocolate at the end, because I think when I drink coffee every morning, and when I drink the coffee, the bitterness obviously stays through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I suppose if you had a sweet, I don't drink coffee with sugar, it's obviously quite sweet, so maybe that's what it is, but it doesn't give you that sharp finish.
Yeah, very nice beer.
But I like, why do you get 500 millilitres of it?
Yeah, the larger bottles.
Yeah.
I think there's certainly a lot to be said about certain beers in 500ml bottles.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people have moved to 330ml for whatever reason.
Mm.
I know a good friend of ours is still going on to me on a weekly basis about Thornbridge going to 330ml bottles.
Oh, really?
Complaining about it.
All right.
I don't know what he expects me to do about it. I think with different beers, I like different quantities. You know, I like certain situations. I'm happier with a 330ml drink. But a beer like this, I think, deserves a larger bottle.
Mm.
I also think there's a learning curve about a larger pour. So as the beer warms, as you get through it, by the end, it's almost tasting different than how it was when you first start drinking it.
Because
I generally, a lot of people will warm these to room temperature, but I generally haven't taken out the fridge, say, half an hour before you go to drink. Because I like to start drinking cold. You just get more the range of flavours, I think, if you do that.
Yeah, so as it's a longer drink, you'll end up with a warmer bottom.
As you sit longer.
But I noticed it with, I think we spoke about it before, Cloudwater, they have that, is it 440?
Yeah, 440
good. You know, like, I think the 330, do you know what it is? I've got these, in fact, these glasses here, they're 330 glasses really, aren't they? So you couldn't...
Well, in fact, some of these smaller glasses are, it's half pint to a lane there.
Mm-hmm.
You struggle to get a 330ml bottle, isn't that?
Yeah.
A lot of these glasses are like that, but I suspect that one's probably more of a...
Well, I've got quite a few glasses of this type at home.
Yeah.
And then I've got this big sort of 500ml one.
Yeah.
I don't know, on a Friday night, I want the big 500ml of something good. And so these, I don't know. If you pour a 330 into a 500ml, it looks disappointing. You think, like, I spent good money on this beer, and I've got half a glass of it, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely you've got to get the right glass balance for me. And that's part of the theatre of it, isn't it, you know? And I know that's pure geekery.
Yeah. I do like this type, but I'd never have it. I've got a load of them at home, and I just don't use them. I use the big one, which... And that's why I like that, you know, you go and get a growler because you get a litre or 500 millilitres. It's nicely in the glass.
So which other stouts have you had that have been noticeable?
The one that I mentioned, the Espresso Town one. I can't remember.
Did you try the Northern Alchemy, the mint?
Yes, I did. And stout. It was really nice. Yeah, no, I did. Mint and chocolate or something.
Yeah. Chopped mint stout.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Really nice.
Yeah.
Edge of the mint to it.
Yeah, but I think these are sort of, it's quite a nice, seems wrong time of year for it.
To be honest, I was struggling to get hold of a bottle.
Oh, really? Where'd you get them from?
Fenix.
Did you? They've got a really good selection in there.
They're much improved these days.
I saw the other day, and I sort of following, but I know nothing about them, but there's a beer shop in Jesmond, I'm sure you know about it.
Yeah.
They've got some good stock.
Yeah.
I mean, I know nothing about them.
There's quite a few bottle shops in the area now. Obviously, Coppers have led the field, but Rehills and...
That's the one. That's the one.
Champion Bottle Shop and Tap in Heaton now, and obviously Glug in town.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And there's various other ones which are due to be open. I think there's one opening in Gateshead soon.
I'm not surprised, because, you know, you go to Coppers on a Friday, it's just a constant stream
of
people. And actually, it's got to a point, I finish work early on a Friday, it's got to a point where I'll not, I'll try and get there as early as I can, because I just know that it's practically, you're queuing for the taps, you know. So obviously popular.
Yeah.
You mentioned one of them as a tap house. Which one was that?
The Champion.
Never heard of it.
It's only been open 3 or 4 months. So how are you getting on with Twitter? Have you started following all the people that I told you to start following? Not been doing your homework?
I didn't do my homework. No, I don't know why, actually. I should have done. I've been watching.
I want you to send a tweet now describing this beer that you're drinking.
Right.
I want you to tag in Tyne Bank Brewery.
Okay.
You're
relying on my IT here.
I want you to take a photo of your beer.
I want to do it with bottle somehow looking like it's pouring itself.
Let me just move out the background.
You don't want to. Right.
Hope you've made it really artistic.
Do you know what? I'm now off the app. You shouldn't be asking me to do tweeting.
It should be second nature.
Oh, that's a long mask. So, what's happening? Quiet.
It's a good job it is. If I'm running the ball.
Dear.
See, this is unusual for me, because obviously I'm on Twitter a lot, so it's kind of second nature to me. So I don't really know what's normal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll be with you in a minute.
Oh, well, you're all right.
Right. I'm now going to find out how to add TimeBank. How do I do that?
Put the at sign.
All right, okay.
And type in TimeBank.
Oh, there you go.
You'll probably find them. And I'm going to check Twitter and see what you've said rather than asking you. Because that's the way we roll. We don't talk to each other when we're in the same room.
We're going to see the magic of technology now, Miles.
Oh, dear.
Let's see.
That blurry in the background.
Strong beer.
So, yeah, TimeBank recently opened their tap room.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Baker. We'll have to get down there, because they have quite a lot of events on and things.
Do they have quite a few? Because I feel like I've seen this logo quite a bit. They've got like corporate, well, I say corporate, they've got like big supermarkets and things like that.
That's a good question. I think that they are in some supermarkets. Who is it? I think Tesco's have a regional buying policy. So I think you'll find some of their beers in there. I think Morrison's do as well. I think it's their Monument, which is their bitter. But this brand, and that's kind of stock across all their range. All their beers are effectively just a different colour of this.
Millennium Bridge, I'm assuming.
But it's a DNA Helix.
All right.
Originally, they had a badge which was a bit more of a traditional football crest style badge with the Tynebridge on it. And actually, when I first started drinking TimeBank breweries, that's what they had. They had a beer called Ridley Racer, which at the time was one of my favourite beers. It was a lovely beer. And that was the beer that made me start noticing them as a brewery. And actually, my first ever untapped check-in was a TimeBank brewery single blonde.
Was it?
Yeah.
Can you still go back and see?
You can, unfortunately, because I've tapped that many in.
You'd be scrolling going, for about an hour.
I'm sure there probably is a way of going back to the start quickly.
You've got me onto that app.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it. It's just a personal... Remember, you were talking about it this way, like a personal journal of...
It's funny, though, because when I first got it, that's what I thought it was. To be honest with you, before I got the app, what got into beer and got into Twitter and following people on Twitter and having chats with them. And I kept seeing people saying they would just tweet. You would see such and such at such and such is drinking X beer and then their comments on it. And I just thought that was what they did. So every week I was getting my beer and I was tapping in drinking such and such. And what I didn't realise was that they're actually tweets generated by Untappd.
Oh, really?
Do you know what I mean? So they're sending their... Untapped check-ins too.
I see.
I soon realised that.
I think what I need to do with it, because at the moment I just literally put a mark out 5 or whatever the thing is. But I think maybe I need to start putting words to it. Yeah. Because actually, when I'm looking, because I looked at yours and things like that every now and then to see what you've been drinking. but I find it interesting if I'm seeing something a bit more than just...
I totally agree. I think... And I know I don't always put comments on there, but what you find is that you just go back and see the beer's got 4 out of 5 and you think, well, what was that?
Yeah.
You know, that means nothing really. Yeah. What were the descriptions? But actually, one thing I found with the tap, I started doing it as a personal journal. Keeping track of the beers I was having and what I liked, what I didn't like, and so on and so forth. But what I realised recently is that actually a lot of brewers take it as feedback. And that was a bit of a wake-up call for me, because all of a sudden it's like, I've got to think a bit more about what I'm putting on there.
And you need, yeah, you need to have a...
And actually, it becomes worse when you don't put comments.
Yeah.
Because if you put a description of the beer on there and what you feel about it, I don't think anyone can complain about the rating that you give a beer.
Yeah.
Because you've justified it. But if you just put a rating on there,
yeah,
the brewery's perception of that rating is undoubtedly going to be different in your perception.
Mm.
So it's...
You need to, if you're drinking, I mean, it's for you anyway, you know, so, you know, I understand the sort of the nuances and the sensitivity that you've got to have, especially if you bump into, you know, people from the brewery and things like that, but it's just personal taste, isn't it?
Of course
you know,
it is.
That's you've got to be able to independently just put what you think of, as I said it, places you and I may have worked at before, Miles. Any feedback's good feedback.
Yeah, well, I'm not too sure. But that, there again, I think there's also a little bit of sometimes brewers get too close to the scores on Untappd, and actually, if they stop to realise that people aren't putting as much serious thought into tapping in, then. It must be very difficult for them to do that because these are their babies that they're sending out into the world, and they want everyone to see how fantastic they are, don't they?
And they've got to remember as well, though, I suppose, is that they are experts at what they do, and I'm not. I'm clueless. So, you know, I might find a really crap beer to be a really good beer, and I'll give it a really good rating, and I might find a really good beer to be not my taste or a bit too complex for what I like, and so... You know, I'll probably give it a bad rating. I wouldn't want to offend anyone by doing that. That's just me not knowing, you know. But
so, how would you go about rating that beer? What's your thought process and how you would get to a rating for this Mocha Milk Stout?
Well, usually, if I'm rating the beers that I have done, I tend to consider it alongside any beer I've ever tasted. So put it there with Foster's, and put it there with Carling, Caffrey's, and all that kind of stuff. And so automatically, a beer like this would automatically get well above 3.5, just on, you know, the fact that there's something that's not just a standard beer here. They've made effort.
Made effort.
Part of it would be taste for me. Like personal taste in, you know, I'm at this point in time, I like IPAs and things like that. So it probably has a cap on where I would put it because it's not going to be in the realms of the double IPAs that I like.
That's another reason why I chose it.
Mm.
Because I know you've had a fair few IPAs, double IPAs. I mean, the last 12 months, double IPAs have been everywhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to take you into a different genre, and I think this is as far away from that style of beer as you're going to get.
Mm.
And I think because you're a coffee drinker as well, it's quite a natural
diversion
for you to go down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would guess with this, I'd give it maybe a
4.25,
something like that. Yeah, I think so. Because, like I say, at this point in time, I can't imagine giving any stout a 5. I think I've probably done 1.5 so far.
And trust me, in time you will be giving stouts 5s. Because that's where I started. Yeah. I've always loved me. Well, I started off drinking bitters and pale ales, and I got into these amazing American IPAs. And
is that when you first got into it? It was American. The path into IPAs, was it American beers that you were trying first? You didn't go reaping, you know, sort of local or?
Well, obviously, I've always drank local ales anyway. Mm, you know, I've always had mainly bitters, to be honest with you, growing up. But there's also like blonde ales as well. Mm. And the step from a blonde ale to an IPA isn't too far removed, because all of a sudden with an IPA, you're just introducing that fruit, that freshness, the citrus flavours and things, you know. And it's like, wow, this is amazing. But from there, I discovered this stout, and that led me on to other stouts as well. And now, I love a big, thick, heavy oozy stout. It's one of my favourite styles of beer.
When would you... If we went out on a Saturday and we go out at midday...
Yeah.
Would you drink that at 12 noon?
No.
When would you... To me, that it feels like a night time... I mean, that's what I put on the tweet. It feels like a nighttime drink.
Yeah. I totally get that.
It sort of feels like something to... I don't know, the energy, if you like, of an IPA.
It's would because come the, I think the idea of going out through the day, you're thinking sunshine.
Yeah.
And I think a beer like this is for a nice dark night.
Yeah.
You know, you're stood in the pub having a bit crack. You're not in any particular big hurry to get anywhere or anything like that.
Yeah.
And this isn't even that big a beer. I'll usually have an imperial stout. It's like a nightcap. Almost, you know, instead of having a liqueur after your coffee or whatever, you know. That's how I like stouts to be.
I need to ask you, I've got an imperial stout, a Russian imperial stout, and somebody at work bought for me, and it's Black Sheep or something like that in Yorkshire somewhere.
Yeah, Black Sheep. Black Sheep Brewery was set up by, is it one of the Thixton family?
What was it?
One of the sons, I think it was, and he set up separately, and hence the name Black Sheep. He's the Black Sheep of the family.
Right, I see.
I went to meet the brewer session with Black Sheep probably about 6 years ago now, and they just started doing that.
Have you tried it?
So, yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it was nice.
It's in the cupboard.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to give it a go.
But with stout in particular, I'll stick in the cupboard for years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've got...
The keep.
Oh, yes. Yeah. What you'll find as well is a lot of them are barrel-aged now.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, after the barrel-aging, the booze, whatever the booze was in the barrel, is really potent, really strong. But age them a little bit longer, and that booze attack just mellows off, and you get all the lovely flavours from it with a really nice quality stout in the background. That's what Almasty's imperial stouts are like.
I saw some imperial stout at Coppers the other day. I thought, oh, what's this one? Well, and I had a look and it was like ridiculous, like
the price.
Yeah, well, that not for me.
That's the thing. That's the thing, though. They are generally bigger bottles and quite expensive because imagine to produce a beer of 10% plus. Alcohol level means you've start with a far bigger grain bill.
No, I get that. Yeah.
And then it's gone through a barrel. Yeah. Now, those barrels don't come cheap. You know? But every now and then it's worth investing and just putting them away.
Yeah.
But by Christmas you'll be sampling those.
I've these. Well, I mean, I've definitely had them in, you know, and I've enjoyed them. Well, they're kind of, if I want a cosy night.
I view beers like this differently to those sorts of beers.
Mm-hmm.
This is more of a steady drink and stout for me. Like I could drink this as part of a session.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas they're a nightcap, they're a settle down beer, you know, die hard on the telly.
They're very different to the other beer type that I've not got involved in as yet, and I think it's really popular, the sour stuff.
Yeah.
I tried the other day, a little sample of a sour beer that was on the taps at Coppers, and wasn't a fan. I can't remember which one it was. It doesn't matter which one it was, it's just that flavour to me is...
My big thing at the minute is that there's much talk about people liking sours or not liking sours. Now, to me, the one thing I want to say is there's no such thing as a sour.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that there's no such thing as sour. Obviously there is. But a sour in itself isn't a style.
Mm-hmm.
It's made up of a really complex myriad of different styles.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them has their own different degree of sourness and different aspects that they're trying to draw out of the base beer.
Yeah.
And within that matrix somewhere will be your way into sour beers. Mm-hmm. I've no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. Is it the yeast that makes it so sour? Like, I don't understand how they do that.
The souring process is to effectively introduce an infection.
What's that?
But a very carefully controlled infection.
Yeah.
You find one of the most common things smaller breweries do an experiment with sours is that they do what's called a kettle sour.
Mm.
And a kettle sour is where in there they'll introduce some bacteria into the beer and leave it overnight,
mm.
and the next morning boil it off to kill that infection so that it doesn't get into their other beers.
Right.
But there's, again, within that, there's different strains of infection that you're introducing into things, so that they bring out different aspects of the base beer. Mm. Depends on what the base beer is, to have the flavours that brought out. A lot of people talk about Brett as being a sour beers, which is a particular type of infection as well. That was the buzz for quite a while.
I'm amazed that's how they do it then. It's through introducing an infection. I had no idea about that. I assumed it was just like the yeast or...
A lot of the lambic styles are naturally fermented, which means that they have these huge great trays that sit in their warehouse and air passes above them and the yeast out of the air ferments the beer.
Oh, wow.
It's pure witchcraft.
Yeah.
Pure witchcraft. Yeah. But the beers themselves are fantastic, so the process to get there doesn't matter, does it?
I didn't want to sort of mention at the time, but you know, in the beer I did that you tried,
yeah,
that
was sour.
Yeah, that was. I introduced that infection on purpose. I promise.
Was that Brett? That was hilarious.
That was really nice, and I agree that as you go down, it was.
It changes subtly, doesn't it? So you get different flavours.
Might be just the more alcohol you drink there.
Well, you know. Probably something.
That's good. So you'll have to tell me the next one I should be looking at. Get me onto another one.
Another stout.
Yeah. I have tried that mint one. I liked it.
To be honest with you, where I went from this stout-wise was to another coffee stout, but it's a breakfast stout, which is Sublime Chaos by Annick Ewing. And that's a fantastic beer.
What about just a standard stout? How can you, if you're just drinking a stout that hasn't got anything, you know, there's no coffee or anything like that, to me, and this is real layman's...
Yeah, I know.
What's the thing? What makes that, you know, what differentiates a good one from a bad one?
Well,
because to me
it's your taste, isn't it? You know, there's no such thing as a bad beer. It's just not to your taste. It's what you're hoping to get out of that beer.
Do you drink stouts that are without any additional kind of? Or do you tend to have them with the coffee or with the...
To be honest with you, generally these days, most of them have something about them. Mm. It's very rare you get a straight stout. The larger breweries do a standard, so like Thornbridge. They have a whole range of stouts and variations of stouts, but they're brewing crazy numbers of beers. I think they have something like 18 bottles on the go at any one time. Do you know what I mean?
So, the reason I ask is that, you know, the IPAs and things like that, I've realised that I've been sucked in to having... So the other day I got the Earl Grey IPA from... no, it wasn't. It was Manchester Brewery.
Marble.
That's the one, yeah. And it was nice. It was different, but I thought... I've kind of got this, and it's got this, Earl Grey flavour that I can certainly detect.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I think this might be nicer if I couldn't taste the Earl Grey. and I find it with, you know, the grapefruit bits and bobs. I kind of feel like it's a great drink on its own, and we don't need to start adding something to it. I like just the taste of. Like a good beer without any of that.
I couldn't agree more with... there's an awful lot of IPAs that are introducing fruit these days, and 9 times out of 10, of the ones I've had, I prefer the beer without that
fruit.
High Wire is the classic. You know, High Wire grapefruit, it's a great beer, really good beer, but Normal High Wire for me is a fantastic beer. I love that beer. And the grapefruit takes away from my enjoyment of
that. Well, I think it is, to me, it feels like it's almost diluting the thing that I like. And the thing that I like is the beer flavour.
Yeah.
And although my palate's not, to the point where I can detect, I mean, there are certain times I can detect a bit of fruit in something when there is no fruit in there. And I like that. I like that you can
infer. What's interesting is that there's been a shift over the last 3 years, I would say, towards more of fruit-orientated beers. Now, I don't just mean beers with fruit in them. I mean getting more of the fruitiness from hops. This New England IPA style that we're seeing now, these hazy beers, they're very much driven around being not bitter at all and getting all the juiciness out of the hops. And that's been coming. You can see that out. And we started off with really bitter IPAs, and slowly but surely they started introducing the different fruits and to eventually now we are where we are. But for me, I still go back. I want to see more of those West Coast IPAs. There's not that many breweries are coming up with new West Coast IPAs anymore. There's some very good West Coast IPAs that have formed a strong place in the market, but there needs to be an evolution on the West Coast as well. For me, I want to see where else breweries can take that flavor.
Do you buy? I know that when we're talking about the West Coast IPAs, what you're meaning there is the hops are from the West Coast. Is that right? Or is it style?
It's the style, really. Right. That sort of very clean, very crisp base beer with strong, punchy, bitter, fruity hops on top of it.
So, would you liken punk IPA to a West Coast style?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. That's what.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where that beer was born, really.
Yeah. And you're right. You don't really see. I saw something the other day. There's also a new. Is it Beaver Town are doing an orange one?
Yeah. Well,
I think they've done it before, and it's a
bloody hell.
Yeah. And I think I'm not that bothered about it. I was excited about the double. I get excited about double IPAs coming out.
Well, that bloody hell's a very nice beer, but again, it's fruit juice. To drink, you don't feel like it's a beer, it's more like fruit juice. And I've said this before, I go back to when I first started drinking West Coast IPAs and these hop bombs, and it was like an assault. So every time I was taking a gulp, it was like I was being kicked in the face. And afterwards I felt like I'd been beaten up, but I enjoyed the experience.
and the difference, that difference is probably something that you'll not get back, that stark difference between when you had beer growing up and it was fine, and then you had that, and that's what I experienced was, beer, and I wasn't that bothered about it, and then I had the a proper IPA.
Yeah.
It's like, that is so different in flavour.
Perhaps one of the best measures for that will be coming out very shortly in Magic Rock's Unhuman Cannonball, which, going back to my beer journey, was the ultimate, because when that came out, it was the most aggressive assault, hop assault I'd ever tasted, and it was amazing.
They release this every year?
It comes out every year.
I'm not trying to, obviously, I've got a couple of cans of Cannonball at home, but I've never had the Unhuman Cannonball. So it's double IPA?
No. Human Cannonball is a double IPA.
Right, okay.
Human Cannonball is at 9%,
traditionally.
Normal Cannonball is 7.4%. Human Cannonball's 9%. Unhuman Cannonball is anywhere from 11 to 13.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
it's fantastic, really. It's great beer. Yeah. But, again, they may take it more towards that hazy hop bomb type, that milk bomb, type of beer, but we'll see.
It's cost them a fair bit to create that kind of thing.
It costs a fortune to produce those beers. We're glad to do.
Totally. I've not had a triple, I've only ever had, I've gone as far as a double.
There's very few triples around. I did see somewhere the other day, someone else was coming up with a triple.
I've got a double IPA at home that was recommended by Drew, which is the Stones. Do you know? Is it Stones? Stones Brewery double IPA. Do you know the one?
I know Stone Brewery.
Is it Stone?
Yeah.
Like,
not Stones, as in.
It's not Stones. Stone Brewery. I've got the. Have you tried it? The double IPA thing. He was saying that it's like, oh, it's a classic.
Yeah.
Never tried it.
Yeah.
Good?
Very good.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Canned.
Yeah. I got one of the normal IPAs and then a double.
They're one of the biggest breweries in America.
Oh, are they?
In this field.
Yeah.
And for years, you would get the odd Stone beer over here, and it would be obviously be 3 months past its date or whatever.
Yeah.
But they opened a site in Berlin. So Berlin.
Of course, I thought it was Germany.
Stone Berlin. They're now producing the beers over there.
Right.
And hence we're getting super fresh cans.
Okay.
That's been open 12 months, I would say. But they went to have one of the best tap rooms in Europe and stuff. So
okay.
Be well worth a visit.
Yeah.
Shall we tuck into this one? Do you want to introduce this one?
I will, yeah. It's I brought this round because... I've mentioned this to you before anyway, Sierra Nevada. Pale Ale. I like and have tried the Torpedo, but this is all about getting beers that are from supermarkets. But I think, you know, it's a good beer that is so freely available. Freshness, I have no idea, but a decent beer, and I think we should look at reviewing things that you can just get hold of anywhere. So... sure, many people have tried this one before. 5.6% volume. I think the Torpedo's in the 7s, is it?
Yeah.
Something like that. So I've got a correct hope.
Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And I assume that you haven't just recently discovered this beer.
Nah.
This will be a beer that you've tried.
Do you know what I heard about? Thank you. Sierra Nevada was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I was just about to mention.
Yeah.
Is this his podcast?
It's his podcast.
Yeah.
And he's dead into his IPAs. And I think he got the head brewer or the owner onto his show. And they were talking about Sierra. I think they were talking about Torpedo, actually. And he was saying that it's a particular style, you know, a particular method of something or other. It sounded like it was a, you know, brand new way of do you know anything about this?
Well, the Torpedo
sounded all very impressive.
If you may, to be honest with you, over here you may hear people referring to a hop back, which is basically it's a separate vessel after your beer is produced that the beer goes through and it's laden with hops, so it's trying to inject and infuse as much of the hop characteristics as possible into the beer. Sierra Nevada call that a Torpedo, and they were the first people to start using this
style. Okay. Yeah.
Which is where Torpedo came from.
But this is obviously, this is not Torpedo.
No.
But do they do that then with this, do you think?
No.
Okay.
This is distinctive because, going back to when I first started drinking beer, one of the main hops around at that time was the Cascade hop, which is what goes into this beer.
Okay.
And Sierra Nevada themselves are based out in the middle of nowhere, right next to some fields upon fields upon fields growing Cascade hops.
Mm-hmm.
So the hops are super fresh into the factory and into the beer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real step forward for them as a brewery.
So when did you first try this?
Probably around the time I had the time
really?
Band.
Yeah.
Was it in supermarkets then? I don't even know if it was.
I remember going to America about, it couldn't even be very long ago, maybe 4 years ago. I went to New York and I went to just a corner shop and I had that on just there in, you know, a normal corner shop in the fridge. And I bought, you know, 4-pack of it and I thought, I can't believe they have that in the fridges there.
Well, over here you've got a bottle of White Lightning or...
Yeah. But I think things have moved on a lot. So now, I mean, this was just from shop down the road from me, you know. So it's getting there. We're catching up.
Bit your nose in there. for me, I've always sort of considered hop ranges to be, there's a scale with hops from, and I always go from mango to grapefruit.
Mm.
That's how right. I see it. Because one end you've got mango, really juicy, not bitter at all hops, mm-hmm. and right the way through to grapefruit, which is sharp. This is kind of mandarin orange, tangerine style on that scale for me.
It's not. I mean, it doesn't take your nose off, does it? It's,
no. Well, this won't be a very fresh bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sell by 3rd of October. I would guess it's a 12-month.
Mm.
So it's six months old, halfway through its life.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get super fresh jump out of your hops.
But in a way, this is something I quite like about it, is that it's a beer that I don't think has... It doesn't excel, in my opinion, in any area,
mm-hmm.
but it's a nice... I don't know, a nice standard. I know that if I wanted to get a beer that, right, I'm not going to go and go to Coppers or wherever I might go and go and get a nice, high quality, fresh beer. I just want to go down the local shop and get a beer in. Well, that's a good one to get because it's like, you know what to expect from
it. But imagine though, before Coppers was there,
mm-hmm.
you went down to your local corner shop and got that. You didn't have all those
mm-hmm.
experience flavours from that you've been drinking in Coppers.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So cheers.
Cheers, yeah. A little bit of bitterness.
A little bit of bitterness. Very clean, crisp.
You've got to try, and I don't know if this is, again, to do with things I like now.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to try to detect the flavour in that.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds like a really insulting thing to say, but you know what I mean? It's, mm-hmm. it's got that this sweetness, but I've got to think about the sweetness. This bitterness, but I've got to think about, you know, I've got to concentrate on it.
Yeah.
But maybe that's, you know, I've been drinking, as I say, quite a few doubles recently. And
it's probably worthwhile saying as well, a bit of a disclaimer at this point. We've just had Time Bank Brewery Mocha Milk Stout, which is a very strong flavour-wise beer to try and follow up with this beer. it's probably struggling a bit in that company, but it's very good.
I think it's a really nice beer. And even now, I mean, we're talking about going to the shops and things, but there are a lot of bars you'll go to that serve crap, and I would welcome that.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
Well, this is one of the first craftier beers that Witherspoon started stocking, isn't it?
Oh, do they have that now, do they?
Yeah, I believe so,
I've been to Witherspoon's for a bit, yeah.
This American craft beer is a living product, best stored cold and enjoyed when fresh. Yeah, Fuller's imported for them, and it's been a huge success story for them. In Sierra Nevada, the brewery in this country, you don't get a lot of their range, but they do. It's a beer camp range where they're exploring all different styles of things, but we just generally don't see them over here.
Mm. They've got. I know that I've seen a variety of things from them, and I don't know whether this was, I bought it from a supermarket. I don't know if the ones that you would see in Coppers would be
fresher.
Much fresher. I assume they would be, but I don't know. Obviously, there's an import there.
I'll be honest, they're probably not, because the importer, Fuller's, will be importing through the same channels.
Mm.
The only difference being is that Coppers would get stock in and it would go straight on the shelves, whereas with Tesco's or whoever, it'll come in, go to a depot, be transported to another branch, and then on the shelves. Eventually, you know, there's a bit more of a delay in there, but probably not that much more.
Yeah.
This is a classic beer, though, where your independent shops can't really compete,
because
your supermarkets will sell that a lot cheaper than they can.
Oh, I can't remember, it was a couple of quid. It wasn't expensive.
Yeah. Which is great. It can look a bit like it's making life difficult for the independent shops, but my take on that is that if Coppers don't put that on their shelves, there's room for another fantastic beer
Completely.
From a small local brewery who doesn't have the opportunity to get their beers on Tesco shelves. So I think it's going to be a good thing.
I think with stuff like that, you know, like it's nice to have in a supermarket where you can just go and get some beers, and you can get them. You know, they're much better quality than the beers that we were speaking about, you know, where Sierra Nevada and things like that, you know, you can get those beers in and they're good value, but you're not going and to Coppers and getting the experience you'd get there. But there's the obvious convenience of a supermarket, you know, so.
I think supermarkets work well for certain breweries as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll always be a need for both. I think there'll always be a market for independent shops as well. But Tesco's have recently increased their craft range, if you like. And you can now get the stone beers in there.
You can get them there, can you? I didn't know that.
They just started stocking them, I think it was just last week.
Yeah. Well, I know that somebody we were speaking to once was talking about particular beer, and I was surprised by this. They were saying that the beer you would get in the independent shop versus the beer you would get in the supermarket differed. Is that?
There have been incidents whereby there's a noticeable difference in a particular beer.
Is that? How would that have worked then? Because
I don't know the details of why it is, but there's certainly going to be some changes. Imagine a small brewery all of a sudden gets a contract with Tesco's, and they have then got to try and satisfy that contract. Yeah. So I'm surmising here is that they're trying to generate more beer than they have been producing.
Yeah.
And within that, it's often difficult to get the same standards if you're trying to produce a bigger quantity. So perhaps that's what caused standards to fall.
Yeah.
But we don't know.
No. I don't know if it was like, because there is a different experience to, if I go to a supermarket and I'm buying beer cheap or much, I would have a feeling of, I don't know, it feels less special. You know, if I'm selecting individual beers from, you know, an independent shop, every beer feels special. And then if I go to a supermarket, I might just pick up four of the same, everything's kind of, the whole experience is watered down. I'm getting it with my Weetabix. You know, it's not going to be the same
feeling. I totally agree. But actually, really, you could be buying the self-same product.
Mm. Yeah.
That's an emotion more than a...
That's my point. Yeah. You know, like, I appreciate it is possible that it's worth, you know, watered down or whatever it is, you know, but part of it could be that whole experience, because I know that, you know, I was saying before we got started that, you know, on a Friday I will go to Coppers and I look forward to doing that, and I'll go and get, you know, go and find a nice beer, and it's all part of the experience of my weekend.
Yeah.
A nice experience, you know, there's nothing negative about that shop.
Yeah.
Whereas if I go to Tesco, you know, I might, not really enjoying being here. I'll go there and go and have a look at some of the beers.
It's massive.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, trudge to the far end of the shop to find the beer aisle.
Yeah. So I think that it's a different experience, and that could, you know, lead into me thinking, the standard's not as good.
There's a huge quality to just that discussion when you're there. Yeah. And I don't necessarily think that is literally just them educating you on the beers on the shelves.
Mm.
It's just that having someone there to chat to as you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't always need a helping hand.
No,
just like a bit of banter, a bit of crack. And
totally. And
Coppers has always been like that for me.
Yeah. I do like a recommendation though as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I tried Alligator Man.
Yeah.
You tried that?
No.
I had that.
Seen it though.
Really, really nice. Mm-hmm. That was, I tried one of their, what's the brewery? Did things like Brave New World.
Tempest,
yes, that's right. And I think maybe it was Brave New World that I tried, and I wasn't that fussed about it.
No.
But that, like, I was really impressed. Really impressed.
Interesting enough, again, Tempest was one of the first breweries that I got into.
Mm.
Originally, they did big 500ml bottles, almost cone-shaped, with, like, a white label on it.
Yeah.
Effectively hand-printed. And it would tell you what it was. Brave New World, when that was fresh, was amazing back then. Because there weren't the other IPAs on the market, you know. Fantastic.
In a way, I feel like I come in, I don't know if I come into this at a worse time than when you did, because your journey, if you like, is at the sort of corresponds quite nicely with IPA. It has blown up, I think. Like the access. I mean, we're talking here about this supermarket beer that's available to us, and there are several. And you've just said that the Stone beer, that, you know, double IPA, is available at Tesco, which that's amazing,
it's nuts, absolutely nuts.
And, And I'm sort of coming into this, you know, I like, you know, I came into it spotting these things that were already happening. You had the you were in the dark ages at one
point. That's it. I started drinking in black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know whether it's like I've just come a great time, or whether I needed the, you know, sort of the difference. You know what I mean?
There's no bad time to come to it, though, is there? You know, the bad time to come is when the beer's not available.
True. But I think that if, you know, it's like, I can imagine that part of, and that this is not, you know, I'm sure that the beer, the Brave New World beer was fantastic when you tried it, you know. But if you tried, I mean, we've just had, so the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale after we've had the Time Bank Brewery Mocha Milk Stout.
Yeah.
And you almost have to say, you know, bear in mind, we've just had this, so it impacts on what we think about this other beer.
Yeah.
If you've gone from not having anything like Brave New World, and then you have that, it's going to taste amazing.
Oh,
and now you've got so many amazing beers that are available to you that suddenly something, and this is again, it sort of feeds into what we're talking about with the Untappd.
Yeah.
Scoring, where like I feel like I've got to, if it's a proper craft beer, I've got to give it a decent score.
Yeah.
I've got to, because I think, well, it's miles better than some of the crap I could have.
Yeah.
So, you know, just as a starting point, it's got to be half decent.
Oh, I agree with that. But there's also perceptions on what's a good score, which is a whole other conversation. Because when I first got onto Untappd, you marked out a 5.
Mm.
There were no half marks. There were no quarter marks. Mm. It was marks out of 5.
Mm.
So 3 out of 5 is more than half marks, which to me was good.
Mm.
Because you didn't have the variation, you know.
You didn't get it, yeah.
You didn't sort of say, oh, well, you know, that's got to be... I mean, 3.5 is good.
Yeah.
But the difference between 3 and 4, it's like...
Well, that's a bit...
It's a big leap.
It is a big leap, yeah, you're right.
But when that's all you've got, you've got to differentiate between them.
Yeah.
Giving a beer 2 felt like that's an average beer. You know.
So based on, do we have the same scoring
well, probably not.
Method then? Because I think that I'm going to, you know, I give you a can of Foster's now.
Mm-hmm.
What are you scoring that?
I'm going straight down the sink. No, If that gets half a mark, I'd be amazed.
Right. Well, actually, though, I suppose for me, I would give it a low mark. I don't think I'd go as low as a half. Maybe I've got to give everyone a 1 at least. got to be kind.
It's not a charity, you know. But to be honest with you, they won't be taking that feedback.
Nah.
So don't worry.
Yeah. True. But I think in that way we're probably on the same lines. But would you give a what, you know, what is a proper craft beer, whether you know, that you don't like, say, would you give that, how low have you gone on craft beer before?
Presumably
you've only ever Untappd on craft beer. You've not done it on Carling, have you?
Oh no, well, I probably haven't had Carling, but other beers I've had, I've always put beers on there.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be unusual for me to give, I wouldn't be against giving a bad beer 2.
And what would warrant that? I mean, when you're saying a bad beer, do you mean like a not very fresh, just not very complex? What is it that?
Well, this is the other thing that with Untappd is that the more you get into beer, you start judging beer against the style and what the brewer is trying to do with that beer as he produces it, not necessarily simply whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it would be a bad representation of a style that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Okay.
If someone's made a real mess of a beer,
I don't think I'd know yet. You know, I've got to get better at my beer to know if someone's messed up. I probably know that I don't like something, but you know, so I probably still give it. I probably still give it at least a 3.
But that's the thing. You will start to step back, because when you start drinking beer, this taste of malt, this taste of hops, you then get into, well, what type of malt, what, you know, that tastes like, I don't know, the caramel biscuit in there. There's almost gingerbread in there. Mm. You know, the hops. What sort of hops? What flavors am I getting from that? And that's where you'll develop
it. You know, I had a beer the other day that had, I think it's a caramel. Is that to do with caramel?
Well, obviously, as the name suggests. Yeah. Yes.
I thought so. Cause I had thought it had a good flavor. Mrs. Kelly and I said, "Oh, what do you think of this?" And she's, "It's got a caramel thing." Nah, but I thought it said caramel, and maybe that was just me thinking, you know, like
that's probably not the main flavour of the beer.
Yeah, I thought I could taste some caramel.
Well, it undoubtedly probably would be in there. But, so final thoughts: Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. For me, this is a classic. You know, I can't fault it. I don't love it. It doesn't blow me away.
No.
But I'm always happy to drink that. I think there was definitely a spell for me with American beers coming over here where I felt that they were always too old and you could tell that they weren't at their best.
Mm.
And I think generally this does feel like it's not at its best. But it's still very drinkable, still very well balanced, nice, refreshing beer.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree with what you're saying. I like it. I like the brand. I like the, you know, I like the brewery. I like, perhaps part of it is that kind of memory, if you like, of this is the first, this and that and Punk IPA are the two beers that I associate most with, probably the first beers in the UK that I tried IPA style. I think Punk IPA was probably the first, actually. That came second, and I remember having more affection towards that because the first time I tried IPA was in America and that felt more
authentic.
Yeah. So I've always got sort of affection for it, but as you say, as a beer, is it at its freshest? No, probably not. Is it flavoursome? Yeah, a little bit. It's nice, but it's not a beer that I would choose over anything good that I tend to go for, but you know, it's always a cozy one.
I would love to try it fresh.
Yeah, me too.
In the brewery. I think it'd be amazing.
I agree. Yeah.
Let's go.
Do you know what?
So that'll be our next episode. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. We do welcome any feedback. You can find us on Twitter at Sippin' Forecast. We also have a Facebook page, which is a Northeast Sippin' Forecast. I am at Miles Lambert, and Rob?
I'm at Treebore3232.
So give us a follow and let us know what you think. Till next time, cheers.